back, everybody, to A Galaxy Not So Far Away, a Mysterious Galaxy podcast, where we bring our hosts together to talk about various topics, about genre or whatever. It's weird not doing this with Becca. I'm Gary, and today it is, I've got Jenny.
Hello.
And Kylie with me.
Hello.
And we're talking about historical fiction. Yes, when Becca was talking to me about this originally, they were telling me that they, really interested in, like, adapting historical events for fictional retellings. So I think they were interested in, like, you know, there's series of books where it's like an alternate universe. Like, this is the direction the world went if the war had been won by the other side or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to ask you guys, because, you know, I think both of you and Kelly are probably the ones at the store that have read the most as far as historical fiction goes. But what are your sort of, like, backgrounds with the genre?
For me, I think, you know, I actually think that, I mean, I did read fantasy when I was young, like, that was one of my favorite genres to read, but I honestly think that historical fiction kind of is what, like, started me out, like, was really engrossing to me as, like, a young reader, and, like, when I was little, I would read those, like, you know, they had, like, the series, I forgot what the series is called, but, like, they would be, like, journals of, like, children.
Dear America?
Yes, like, the Dear America series.
I remember those.
Like read those. Really big into Magic Tree House, you know.
Oh, yes.
But also, like, when I got into junior high and high school, most of the books I read were historical fiction. I don't know. Sometimes it was historical fiction and sometimes it was just, like, books that were... No, I guess they were. Like I'm just thinking, like, one of my favorite books in high school is The Scarlet Pimpernel, which is technically historical fiction. I mean, it was written in, like, 1903, I think, but it was written about the French Revolution.
Yeah, that still counts.
Yeah, and, like that and, like, just learning about different historical periods. I was really into, like, French history. So I read a lot of, like, Alexandre Dumas and, like, Victor Hugo and stuff in high school. But the kind of way that historical fiction just kind of lends itself to, like, developing into an interest in fantasy, I think, it comes together really easily. Because another writer that I really liked reading in high school, because for some reason our high school library had a lot of his books, was Stephen R. Lawhead, which I think we have, like, one or two of his books at the store, but I don't think he's super, like, I don't think he's written a lot currently. I think he has that one series that's ongoing, but he had this one series that I read over and over again when I was in high school, called The Pendragon Cycle. And the first book I have on my shelf, because I found it at a used bookstore one time, which was exciting, but the first one's called Taliesin. Or Taliesin, however you want to say it. I think it's Taliesin. It is interesting because it is, like, the story of King Arthur and the Round Table and, like, that legend, but it feels very much like historical fiction the way that it's written, because it is, like, kind of really, really grounded in, like, early... like, or, like, 6th-7th century, like, Wales and stuff. Sure. Like that. So it feels very much like historical fiction, even though the first book kind of deals with, like, he brings in this Atlantis plot line.
Okay. Which
somehow made sense. I don't know.
Nice.
It's an interesting series, but, like, that kind of, I feel like, was the beginning of my really fervent love of fantasy.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know. What about you, Jenny?
I mean, I think similar, like, there was a really big connection for me growing up between, like, historical fiction and fantasy. And I think probably because a lot of things that got me interested in fantasy or that I liked about fantasy were, like, myths and King Arthur and stuff like that, which are totally fantastic in a lot of their elements, but they're also historical, right? They're used as origin stories a lot of the time. And so, like, I really, like, loved the Camelot musical, the old one.
Yeah.
And, like, I was a weird kid. I did, like, we had to do, like, reports on places for school at one point, and my parents let me do mine about Camelot.
That's amazing.
Amazing.
Using evidence from the musical to like talk about the climate, and
that's great.
Which, looking back, I'm like, wow. But I was also really into like musicals and Les Mis, so these were all like gateway historical fiction things. Yeah. I read all of the Dear America books, and then they had like the Dear America spinoff series that was like about royals from other countries. Huh. Like there was one about Cleopatra that I really, really loved.
That's fun.
And just things like I read a lot of Anne Rinaldi growing up, who did kind of like historical fiction romance, like YA romance.
Got it.
Like very young YA kind of. Pretty light, but like I read all of her books and all the Miss, all the Camelot. And then I don't know, I like time travel books, but not quite time travel. I like books that are kind of set in both like the past and the present.
Sure.
So they're not quite time travel, but they're like half historical fiction.
Yeah.
So I read a lot of those. I read a lot of, I don't know. I like books when I feel like I learned something.
Got it. That makes
and
sense.
That was my, like, these are often my gateway to that. Like one of the most recent, like two parallel time ones is called, Next Year in Havana. Hmm. And it's a romance, but it's about Cuba and the Cuban Revolution, and I learned a lot through that book, like fact checking everything from like the historical fiction side, but that's like the gateway into it for me.
Yeah, I love that.
That's fun. I found fantasy pretty early and just kind of fell like deeper and deeper into that. I think I really like made a point to remove myself from stuff that had like Earth history, if that made sense. I like didn't want more schoolwork. I don't know if that's actually true, but like thinking about like what 12-year-old Gary was like picking up books at the library, like I think I deliberately made a choice to like go for the sword and sorcery stuff more than anything else. But I agree with what you're saying about like sometimes there's like it's fun reading a book that takes place at two different points in time. Like I really loved a book by Matt Haig from a few years back called How to Stop Time. That was about a guy who just stopped aging. He was effectively immortal and had lived up to the present day and then returned back to his home in London where his wife died during the Black Plague. And there's like chapters interspersed with his memories of what it was like living there 400 years previously. Which I found very fascinating. And then, again with time travel, but, The Future of Another Timeline by Annalee Newitz also takes place. There's a very large chunk of that book that just takes place at the World's Fair in the 1800s. And, I kept finding myself during that book going and looking up certain names and certain references that were made and being like, oh my God, like this is all real history. And then of course, Annalee put all of that stuff in the back of her book anyway. As reference material, which I thought was great, but I blew through that arc and was just delighted with like how much real world history stuff there was.
That's
do
so
you,
fun.
Do you oh, have sorry. Particular, no, I was gonna thank you. It is fun. I do like it. I do want everyone to read that book. No, I was going to ask if you guys have particular, like time periods that you like to talk about or like to read. Oh, sorry. That's my roommate's dog is not happy.
Oh no, sad puppy.
Do you guys have like particular like time periods that you like to research or certain like cultures that you're more interested in than others?
It kind of really depends. I'm looking at some of the things I wrote down to talk about and they're kind of all over the place.
Sure.
I do really like, and I think it is again kind of just going back to like the Stephen Lawhead books that I was talking about earlier. He had a few other series that dealt with like Welsh mythology and like that kind of stuff. And so I feel like I really enjoy like historical fiction books that deal with like Ireland, Wales, Scotland, Britain, like in that history. And I think that's just kind of like, it's very comforting to me because it's kind of what I was reading when I was younger. But like a lot of the like things I've been reading lately that I would classify as historical fiction, they're just kind of like all over the place, I think. And I don't know, I always find it really fascinating. Just as long, like, it is, I did want to say before we moved on, I don't know if either of you have read anything by Elizabeth Kostova, but she has a few books. I've read two. I think she has three. I haven't read the third one yet, but they're all standalones. But the second one that she wrote is called The Swan Thieves, and that kind of has that element of two timelines happening simultaneously. It's about this artist who is trying to figure out something, like a secret about this painting, and it's back in time. You find out it was like this woman that had painted it, but then like her husband or something took credit, and it's like these him trying to figure it out, and you're getting her story at the same time. It's really interesting. But her one book that I really love is her actual, her debut book, which is called The Historian. And we have it at the store. It's in our horror section. But it is really cool because it is, and it basically kind of has three timelines going at the same time, because it's about this girl whose dad is a professor, dad is a diplomat, who lives, they live in Europe, and basically she kind of discovers that he has all this research done on the historical figure of like Dracula. Or like Vlad the Impaler.
I remember this coming out.
It is such a good book, you guys. I mean, it's kind of like, it's kind of got that like dark academia. It's a little slow, but I just find it fascinating because it has all those like historical details in it. But basically you have two different point of view like narrations happening. You have the girl as she is retracing her dad's steps of research. You have the dad doing his research, but he is also tracing the steps of his mentor, his professor, who has disappeared under mysterious circumstances. So you have like three different times of people going and trying to figure out that the mystery of
that does
Dracula
sound really cool.
And like, is he real? Like, because the premise of the book is like, oh, this was a real historical figure, but wait, is he also a vampire?
Yeah,
he's still alive, kind of thing.
Is he still real?
Yeah, that book's really fun, and I love it because it not only gives you like random historical details about like medieval Eastern Europe, but also is like three different time periods within the like the 20th century.
Sure.
Of like,
I really like the like nesting narrative like that. Mm-hmm. I think that's cool.
It's really fun.
Actually, before, I have another question, but I don't want to like not give Jenny an opportunity to talk about what your favorite like time periods are.
I mean, whatever flows best.
Yeah.
But I'll go. So I'm like really obsessed with ancient Egypt.
Okay.
I have been for years, and it kind of all started with Mara, Daughter of the Nile, which is a book that I read in sixth grade for class. And I'm pretty sure The Mummy came out at like the same time.
The Mummy.
And so
dramatic masterpiece.
My like career goals, dream job was like to be an archaeologist.
Okay.
And to learn how to read hieroglyphics and study ancient Egypt, essentially.
That's amazing.
And that was my dream for a long time.
I wanted to be an archaeologist when I was little for a while.
Yeah.
It seemed so glamorous.
It did.
I mean, but so there's a lot of things that kind of call back to ancient Egypt that I really love. And then I guess the other time periods, if there's anything written about like Renaissance England or British Isles,
okay,
I'm there. Mm-hmm. If it's a TV show or a movie, I've already seen it and I'll watch it again 5 times.
absolutely.
And then there's also stuff like as I've talked about before, right? I have a degree in literature, so I've read a lot about kind of literary time periods, and so it's not always historical fiction, but sometimes it is. And like my area that I will learn historically speaking, about quite a bit is kind of early to mid 20th century kind of Anglophone lit, especially, sure. And then kind of expanding through the end of the 20th century Caribbean writing. Oh. So like there's a lot in what I researched and did that came out in these kind of moments that are looking back and that are adapting, but are also kind of setting their books in their historical fiction, right?
Yeah.
So as a way of like understanding the present. So that is like something that I love too. And I will continue to go back to that.
Totally. That's fascinating. I was going to ask, like, what do you think makes a book of historical fiction? Like, it has to be, it's more than just being set in that time period, I would think, right? Or like, is that enough? Like, if you write a story, like, I mean, is a story about Jack the Ripper historical fiction? I mean, I guess it is because it's a figure, right?
Yeah. I think
that's enough
as a qualification.
Like,
but what makes it great?
What about like the prestige, right? Like, yeah, I think that's the thing. I think that there should be a little bit more than just the time period, right? Like,
yeah, I think the trick with historical fiction is like, if you want like strictly historical fiction, I feel like, yeah, I think it has to kind of be definitely grounded in reality and
totally.
Like historical events, either tied to like a figure or an event.
Yeah, I think that like making references in the text to like individuals living at the point, or like what the situation, like grounding it in what the real world was like at that time. Right. Like, mm-hmm. I was going to use the prestige as an example of like, oh, it takes place in the past, but it's about like magic and well, it's about science. It's,
but I still think
whatever.
That's like historical fiction.
Yeah, because like he still goes to Tesla and references Edison, and there's like, you know, like even sans like those characters, I think there's a lot of work to be done in like what the state of the world is at that point in time.
I think it's really interesting because I think also like historical fiction kind of lends itself to low fantasy in a way. And by low fantasy,
sure.
Like here, I actually have the Wikipedia definition pulled up.
Great.
But it is. Low fantasy or intrusion fantasy is a subgenre of fantasy fiction where magical elements intrude on an otherwise normal world. It thus contrasts with high fantasy stories, which take place in fictional worlds
like
with
other
their
realms,
own sets
yeah.
of rules and physical laws. So like low fantasy, I have a lot of things on my list that I would characterize as low fantasy and also historical fiction, just because
okay.
they have like one of my favorite books. That I've read in the last like 2 years is called It's the Bird King by G. Willow Wilson.
Okay.
And this, it's definitely historical fiction in that it takes place in Spain, kind of right as the like in the beginning, middle of the Spanish Inquisition, when Spain is kind of, when the monarchs of Spain are kind of taking over the Iberian Peninsula and consolidating their power and pushing, like the last kingdoms of the Muslims off of the peninsula. So it takes place in that really defined time period
yeah.
setting, but it's magical in that like one of the characters has this ability to create maps of places he's never been. And there's like djinn and they're trying to get to this mysterious island so they can be safe from the Spanish Inquisition. And it is such a good book. I love it so much.
Sure.
But yeah, it is definitely like you can't have that book.
Yeah.
Like that book wouldn't be what it is without the setting and the historical detail that kind of surrounds the otherwise fantastical elements.
Yeah.
So I think like historical fiction can blend really, really easily and really well and beautifully with fantasy, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think that the historical fiction like connotation, it sounds like, you know, the time period having it like actual weight on the plot, right? Like,
yeah.
you can't take that book you were just talking about and put it in a different time period and have it be the same story, because it's not.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. Do you think there's a... I was going to say, do you think there's a time period for, like, when can something be called historical fiction? But I think if the events of history that are contemporary to when the story is being told affect the plot of the story, then, like, I suppose that's irrelevant. Like, you could write a story about someone else in New York during 9/11, and I guess that's still technically...
Historical fiction.
Yeah. I mean, if you wrote a book about early 2020, that's historical fiction, I suppose, right?
I think it kind of... I don't know. I think it...
So whenever I think about genre, and I was talking about this the other day with my students, like, genre is fluid, and our understandings of genre are always fluid, and they're always overlapping, too. So something can be historical fiction and fantasy. Something can be historical fiction and horror or literary fiction or all of these kinds of labels, but it's not necessarily kind of, it's less of a one size fits all under one genre, but like how are we putting a puzzle of different genres together in each book?
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
So like, and especially things like Kylie said, I think she's totally right, where historical fiction lends itself to low fantasy a lot of the time. And especially the earlier you go in the historical period being figured, and like you get back and back and back into different cultural beliefs that were contemporary that may seem like fantasy now, it gets more complicated. Like when I am reading the historical fiction set in ancient Egypt, right? They very much believe in the gods to be living beings a lot of the time. And it's like a different religious system, but it's in a lot of ways would have the markers of how we also classify fantasy, even though it's not really fantasy.
Yeah, totally. That
makes sense.
I think that's, this is something we kind of butt our heads against every time we do a genre specific topic, I think, is that like there is a lot of wiggle room in there.
What? That's the fun. So, okay. I'll go off on this.
No, go ahead.
Neil Gaiman, we all love Neil Gaiman, has a speech that is called The Genre of Pornography and the Pornography of Genre.
Okay.
And I have taught this a couple times now, and I taught it to my students this semester. And he said what he says is the purpose of genre is to either one, tell a reader where to look, or to tell a reader where not to look, as far as like searching the shelves of a bookstore. But to try and limit what you do with a genre, like it's always a balance as a writer of playing with readerly expectations of a genre, but also twists and doing something new and unexpected and crossing genre in a way. So that idea of a genre is just kind of an opening guideline, but it doesn't necessarily govern the text itself. Like
it's
the rules of genre have to do with the relationship between the reader and the text, as opposed to the relationships within the text itself.
I love that.
Yeah. It's a very cool essay. I highly recommend it. It's in the View from the Cheap Seats, the transcript.
Yeah. I have that. Okay.
I can also send you the PDF. Great. But it's like, so that's where like, I don't know. I have a little bit of a thing with the genre because I find it to be a limiting way of classification.
Yeah.
I guess like sense. I felt the same way, like in literary studies, they do a lot of like time periods, right? And they will bound time periods by very specific years. Like modernism is the very beginning of World War I to the end of World War II, and that's it, some people will say. And that's just not historically true. Like to think that that year hits and literature suddenly just changes. Like it's just not, to me, it's not.
Stop the press.
Terribly productive way of thinking about it.
Yeah.
And to measure and like to go back to kind of what I was talking about with like the, I like reading about like the Caribbean stuff that happens later, is because cultural, like, cultures don't develop on parallel timelines.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
that's
great. I like literature that comes at certain points of cultural development or revolution, because I think it says something about that history and it says something about that culture, but those don't happen at the same year in different things. And then if you want me to go on like a thing about how people relate post-colonialism to post-structuralism and modernism to colonial imperialism, but there, it's like a false parallel dichotomy that happens in literary studies. Totally. But it's just, it's only based on a timeline that doesn't align well.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't really work with something so like fixed when like change is a process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Something gets different over time. I also think it's interesting. You mentioned that the stuff that you're interested in is stuff that takes place during like cultural upheaval or during like revolution or whatever. And like, I feel like a lot of like even just like the general fantasy that I read, I think that that's like what makes those stories interesting, is it's about like shaking up the way things are.
Yeah.
Like though,
I truly believe we figure things out through writing and figure things out through reading, and art has long been like a political commodity, essentially. Like, and there's many ways that that shows up, but like the artists are the ones who often are at the root of creating new national identities, new cultural identities, like, and shifting that and doing it in a way that can be a lot more powerful than somebody kind of coming down with an edict or a law that says this is now this.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it really is kind of like storytelling is how like cultures figure out what's happening or like process like things that might not seem as though they are related to like everyday life, but like things that trickle down and affect people, and that like the art that is created because of that, whether it is novels or stories or like theater or music, it kind of all ties into people processing changes and culture and trying to find that identity.
Yeah, it's fascinating because, like, I think on the one hand, you have, like, the artists who are creating a thing, who are, like, looking at the world around them, and they're inspired by, like, the things that they see, and that comes through in the writing that they do. But then I don't know that, like, I, as a person in the audience, just, like, going to the bookstore every couple weeks and buying a new book and, like, reading different bits of fiction, recognize the fact that, like, you know, all the new stuff that's coming out, like, they're all... I mean, I don't know. I guess more and more I notice it now because I'm reading ARCs and because I've been a bookseller for a few years. But like seeing like not even, I don't want to say political trends necessarily, but just like opinion of, or just like cultural opinions of things, like what we find acceptable changes, what sort of representation that we are willing to like put into novels. And you see like more and more representation being shown in bits of fiction, and then it sort of carries back, like there's like a tug push and pull, a tug of war sort of thing going on between like what's happening in history in the modern day and what people are willing to tackle in books that are wrestling with the problems of history in the modern day, even if that doesn't take place now, right? Like I think that, I mean, God, I'm not going to talk about Jen Lyons every time we do a podcast, but
it's
like,
okay.
I think that
it's really topical right now, especially.
Yeah,
Carrie.
I think that that's one of the things is like her book is wrestling with like so many contemporary things, like gender identity, like the authority of the noble house or whatever, right? The corporate houses that have taken over or whatever, and that's like entirely removed from Earth. And yet it's still like wrestling with the same things that like we have to deal with as a society.
I think a trend I've seen in a lot of stuff I've been reading over the last like year, like a lot of contemporary, well, not contemporary fiction, but things that have been coming out.
Yeah.
Like the newer stuff is there is lots of critique also in Course of Dragons, the Jen Lyons book. There's so much critique of like classism and imperialism, colonialism. There's a lot of people wrestling with that. And the cool thing, bringing it back to historical fiction, that I think is really cool about historical fiction is that a lot of times people will write, or at least in historical fiction books that I've read or that I enjoy, people will write about a different time period or a different event, but in reality, they're writing about something current or contemporary.
Yeah.
Like because I mean, if you look at history, it does, like, I mean, so cliche, but history repeats itself, right?
Yeah, right? Like, it's just how cultures work.
Like, humans pretty much operate similarly to the way we've always operated.
Yeah.
And so you have these themes that are repeated over and over again in different societies and different cultures and different contexts, but we can still relate to them. I mean, this is just me being a theater nerd, but like one of the reasons like Shakespeare's plays have been so popular for like 400 years is because you can literally, you can repurpose the text to fit any, like pretty much any time period, any situation, and it still rings true because that's like human experience. And so the cool thing about historical fiction is that you can take a definite time period, setting, figure, event, but you can use it to talk about something that people are experiencing right now. And I feel like that also helps people process what is happening. Like if there's something happening that it's kind of too big for us to really know the effects or kind of know how it is affecting us on like a deeper level, because we're just in the middle of it. I think historical fiction is really useful because then you can be like, oh yeah, this kind of happened in this way and this is how people dealt with it, or it happened this way and they dealt with it very poorly, it, you know, stuff like that. So historical fiction is really cool that way.
Totally. Are you fans of those stories that go back and are like, okay, like we're going to take, this book is going to take place in this time period, but this historical event went this way instead, where it's like an alternate universe thing? I know that there's that really big like sci-fi series.
Philip K. Dick one?
Well, there's like a series. I think it's like Eric Flint and a bunch of other people.
Oh, it's that like 1600 whatever.
Yes, it's essentially that. Like they're all, every one of them, and a bunch of authors have written in this series. It's like a year, and then it's whatever. I think one of them was like the Gettysburg. I don't remember what it wasn't a dress. It was something else. But I think that those are just like a completely alternate timeline. History has gone an absolutely different way. I don't even know if the historical figures are the same, or if they're the same, if they're trying to be the same people. It feels so much more removed from like actual history than I think a lot of the historical fiction that we've been talking about is. It's alternate history, right? So like it's a different thing.
Oh, the one I was thinking of was The Man in the High Castle.
Oh yeah. I've heard that's really good. Like,
I have not read it. I've watched some of it, but it was very good.
1632 is the Eric Flint series, by the way, is the name of the first one. There are 60 plus books.
I haven't read very many books that deal with like that kind of like specific.
I haven't either. I don't think.
I see them come out every once in a while.
I have read books where like people think they're changing the past. These usually involve time travel, right? Where they go back and change something, or they're engaging with like past events and they go differently than like say they thought they went, or from their understanding, but it turns out that they didn't.
Timeline, was that what it was called? I think
I did not watch it. It was on my watch list forever.
I think I watched the first season, but yeah, it kind of, they did that pretty much.
And we can get into like the science of timeline, or timeline, time travel, and on our future time travel episode. But I will say a lot of the historical fiction that I've read is not that. Although the next up book on my reading list, I think, might be.
Oh. Interesting. Okay.
We'll see.
Yeah, I think that I know people that are really into those stories, but that's also just not really something that I've picked up a lot of.
Yeah, I think I'm more interested in alternate history that has a fantasy element.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sure. I really love the Temeraire books by Naomi Novik.
I've heard those are great.
And those are the Napoleonic War, but with dragons.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
It's amazing.
But, like, stuff like that is more my cup of tea as far as historical fiction that kind of goes in that alternate history route.
Sure. The As I Darken trilogy books are sort of that. It's like, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah, right? I love
it's
those.
It's Ivan the Terrible as a woman.
Yeah, yeah. So, or right. No, it's the And I Darken books by Kirsten White.
Yeah.
It is Vlad the Impaler.
Vlad the Impaler. My bad. Sorry. It's been a while since I've read those.
And it's not, yeah, and it's, they have nothing to do with the Dracula myth.
No, yeah.
It's just wholly kind of historical fiction, but
it's been like gender swapped.
Yeah. Character. And they are excellent. I love those books.
Yeah, I've heard they're great.
They're so good.
That's so
And fun. I love Kirsten. She's amazing.
She's delight. Awesome. Yeah. I don't know. Like I said, I tend to lean more into the like high fantasy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The more removed from like earthly existence, the happier I am.
Gary, I know I've told this to you before, but you need to read the David Bodd trilogy.
I know, yeah. I know. You need to read it.
I will say though, I think Kylie, the third one is my favorite because it comes back to almost a historical fiction.
It does. I'm like, I think I'm here. Wait, I'm gonna look and see how far I am. I am. I'm only 18% of the way into that book, so I'm a fifth.
There you go.
I'm already experienced all the feelings.
No, you haven't. You haven't experienced them, Kylie.
I've experienced a lot. There's so much more to come. It's just gonna devastate me. But these books are so good. But I have really enjoyed that they made it. Back to the historical fiction root of the first book, kind of.
Mm-hmm. The first book is only that way for like a very small.
I know. I'm trying not to give spoilers.
It was like
though.
Egypt, and then I was like, "You're not in Egypt anymore.
You're no longer in Egypt."
But I'm still there. So,
but yeah, I just love those books so much. I like them because yes, there's that historical fiction element. But I love that this kind of goes into historical fiction is like blending like mythologies with real life and being like, hey, wait, these mythologies are real and how would that look in like interacting with. I just like with the human world. I like in the second book because basically the premise of these books is that there is a hidden kingdom of jinn in like mm-hmm. the Persia area of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like completely cut off from humans, except there are members of the society that are half human. But then they humans can't know they exist basically. But then in the second book, there's like this interaction with human technology, which is really interesting and kind of like how these creatures, like these beings that kind of reject human technology because they have magic, interact with human technology, which I really liked. But then it also kind of has that historical fiction element in that it is taking place in the early 19th century in this part of the world. And so you have one of the characters who's half human kind of dealing with where she came from and the like politics of her home and the politics of her new home mm-hmm. and kind of like navigating that.
That sounds really good. I need to read these.
They're really excellent.
They're very good, Gary. Like they're really good.
Ugh, they just make you feel so much.
That's I like that in my literature though.
Yeah, if you're not sobbing on the floor at some point, then what are you doing?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. Most of the stuff that I read that if it deals with history in any way, most of the stuff that deals with history deals with it because it's like a time travel thing, which like I think is why maybe Becca and I had pitched both of these sort of like topic ideas back to back, because we were having this kind of conversation.
Mm-hmm. They're very related.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Have you ever read any, I haven't, and it's on my list of things to read, but have you ever read any Connie Willis?
I've not.
Because I know she has, there's the one book that I really want to read is called The Doomsday Book, I think.
I heard it's good. And, Linda really, really likes Connie Willis.
Yeah, and it's with characters going back in time to basically the Black Death.
Yeah.
And
I actually didn't know that's what those books were about.
Yeah, I really want to read that one. I've heard those books are amazing. It just made me think of this other sort of historical fiction time travel book that I read in high school. That has no, I don't know why I thought of this. But did you ever read, Jenny, did you ever read? Oh no, I'm blanking on the title. It's the one that was made into a movie with Christopher Reeve and Jane Seymour. Oh, Somewhere in Time. Did you ever read that book?
Thanks. Oh.
This book, this guy like hypnotizes himself into time traveling. Like, it's the weirdest premise. Hmm. He basically like goes to this old hotel and like dresses up in like period clothes and like sits in a room and like convinces his mind that he is like 100 years earlier. Like,
amazing.
I don't know. It's like he hypnotizes himself into time traveling. And then like he meets this
fantastic
woman and they have a love affair and all this stuff. But anyway, but that book was always very fascinating to me. I wouldn't say I like loved it, but like the concept of being able to, like, young me definitely was like, I feel like this could be a thing.
You should read the Gwendolyn Womack books.
Okay.
I think you would like them.
What are they about?
So all of her books have like a historical fiction element, or at the very least a historical element. So the one I like the best is called The Memory Painter. And it kind of involves past lives and kind of reincarnation of things. And so there's a lot of, and this happens in a lot of her books, where there's interludes with like kind of obscurely famous historical figures, like not somebody that you would have heard of unless you study that particular area, like classical music. Like, it's not Mozart, but it's like this guy that Mozart knew or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so there's kind of flashbacks to it back and forth. So that one is really good. And then there's The Fortune Teller, which is about a manuscript that travels through time, which is really, really good. Those ones are my favorite.
I have a copy of Time Collector.
That one's good too. That one is the most recent one.
Yeah, I think I have an arc of it or something. I don't remember.
But The Memory Painter is beautiful and like really awesome. I'm kind of a sucker for like books about manuscripts too.
Sure. Hey, me too.
So the other one that was on my list too is Possession by A.S. Bayat, which is really, really good. If you haven't read it, it's kind of like uncovering a historical mystery through manuscripts that are kind of found in a contemporary time, and then it flashes back to kind of the historical kind. I believe it's from like the Romantic era, like, and it's kind of the hidden life of a poet.
I love that.
You find out it's really good.
That sounds so good.
Very nice.
And the history of love is kind of like that too, which is really good.
I love historical fiction books that are also like, oh my goodness, I'm blanking on the word, books that are told through letters.
Sure.
Epistolary?
Yes, thank you. Epistolary. I love books that are historical fiction and epistolary, which is kind of like The Historian, the one I mentioned earlier, because like you have the one POV, which is the girl narrating, and the other POV is her reading her dad's notes.
Yeah, and like, well, because epistolary like novels are such like a historical genre, like that would also be a genre, like the epistolary novel was huge, right, for a while. So that in and of itself is like very temporally placed. Like Dracula is epistolary.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It definitely, you're right. It definitely, when someone writes, like, if, when someone writes a book like that now, like, I just thought of, like, this is how you lose the time war is, yeah. is an epistolary mm-hmm. novel. The way that, like, it just kind of lends itself to feeling like, it lends itself to feeling like, sorry, my dad poked his head in my room, so I got distracted. It lends itself to feeling like a historical fiction novel, even though, like, This Is How You Lose the Time War is definitely not. It's,
yeah.
it's science fiction, but it feels timeless and old mm-hmm. in a way, just mm-hmm. because of the way that it's mm-hmm. written.
I think part of that also has to do just with, like, we talked about the beauty of language, I think, on the Lighthearted episode a little bit in regards to this book, but also a couple others. But I think that there's, like, something really sort of poetic about how the letters are written in This Is How You Lose the Time War that feel more old-fashioned than, like, I don't know how many people write, like, handwrite letters to each other anymore.
If that makes letters.
Sense. I love writing letters too. I don't feel like I do it enough.
I don't do
it. And yeah. And so I think that there's something, you know, there's something really, like, I don't want to say poetic again. I don't have a better word. Lyrical almost about the language in something like that.
Yeah.
These letters back and forth. They're so romantic and touching.
Yeah, because you definitely do write like a different
possession.
Way.
Hmm.
I just want to go through your lists and read all these books now. Oh, I was actually, it's funny, I'm looking at your list, Jenny, and I was going to ask if Outlander counts as a historical
Outlander
fiction.
Is super historical.
Yeah,
I would
right?
say, like, if we are, like, prioritizing genres, I would classify it as historical fiction before yeah. fantasy.
That makes
because,
sense to me.
Like, yes, there's time travel. That is, like, the only fantastical element.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's yeah. the only okay. thing.
Yeah, and, like, the majority of the books are set in the 17th.
Yeah, that's what I thought, in, like, whatever time
period. Isn't it, like, double historical fiction, though? Because the frame is, like, set in the 40s, right?
Yeah, the frame is, like, right after World War II, but, like, huh. only really one of the books takes place half there.
I don't know, I've only read the first book.
Yeah, like, one of the books is kind of half taking place in that.
That's fascinating. I didn't realize that any of those books, like, didn't strictly take place, like, in the historical time period.
Yeah, and I mean, like, Outlander is the kind of a very good example of, like, being super historical and grounded in, like, Scottish history and, like, trying to avert, like, the massive tragedy of Culloden, which is, like, a huge thing in Scottish history, but then also, like, being unable to actually change history.
Yeah.
So that, in that aspect, it's very much about, like, the limits of time travel.
Sure. Yeah, there's I don't know if there's an actual book about this, but it's a thing that I've seen come up a lot, is the idea that, like, people talk about, like, oh, if I had a time machine, I'd go back in time and I'd kill baby Hitler. But, like, if you go back in time and you kill Hitler, like, someone else will just, like, that's not going to end the war, right?
The best description, like, that I have heard in years of, like, that kind of time travel, like, as close as we can get to a science of time travel is yeah. from Avengers Endgame.
Yes.
Bruce Banner explains it, and he explains it very concisely and very well, where it's, like, in the science of time travel, like, anything that you go back and do would have already happened anyways. Like, it's this idea of, I don't know, it's there are actual theories of time travel.
There is a I'm sorry to turn this into time travel talk, but there is a show that I really, really love called Dark. It is a German TV series on Netflix. And that one is, it, the time travel loop is so fixed that anytime someone goes back in time and tries to change something, it turns out that, no, they were actually part of the reason the thing happened in the first
yeah,
place.
Yeah, exactly.
It is stuck. This is what happened and what will always happen. Which is fascinating. Actually, Prisoner of Azkaban is like that. Also.
True. Yeah.
Yeah, Prisoner, that one like follows the rules of time travel as much as there can be rules of time travel.
Yeah, of the like, no, you're not going back in time and changing something. Like, the thing you went back to do, you already did. You're fulfilling time. I love. We can get way into time travel on another episode. But
coming soon on a galaxy not so far away.
Seriously. But yeah, like I like that idea of like, you know, there is sort of an inevitability, like just being able to like enter a different time period doesn't necessarily mean that you're suddenly super like that you can. I mean, on the one hand, anyone can affect change and change the course of history. But on the other, like, that's a very difficult thing to do.
I think, like, to bring it back to the historical fiction, one of the reasons I like historical fiction, right, and reading fiction as a way of learning history, even if that, you know, the fiction itself isn't historical, is, like, it may not change, like, the outcome of what happened, but it can change your understanding of how it happened and why it happened in a way that, like, and it can challenge histories, and like you can read against the archive is one of the things that we'll talk about, and like trying to uncover the histories that were silenced because of kind of dominant powers, and like the adage, right, like history is told by the winner or the champion. And so the way of getting back at that is through historical fiction and through like reading non-dominant fictions of the time or non-canonical fictions of the time. And so that is why I like learning about it that way, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting way to like get into the head of characters or people that would just live during that time period. Even if these characters that we're following are fictional characters, like hopefully the person that does the writing about it has done the research and knows, like, is able to sort of capture what it would be like for those people.
Yeah.
Going through this event, which I just find that so fascinating. I should really read more of this stuff.
This is like a random tangent, but something you just said, Gary, one of my favorite things about historical fiction books is when the author puts in the back of the book, like, all of the things they used for research.
Yes,
the back of Kirsten White's And I Darken trilogy. She was like, "Here's all the stuff I researched."
Great,
and then I ended up listening to an audiobook about the fall of Constantinople, and it was fascinating because of like the list of things. I love it. I love looking at people's what they went for different aspects, because then I'm like, oh, this is what fascinated me about these books, so now I can go learn more. So anyway, authors, if you're listening, that is my favorite thing.
give us your sources. Cite your sources. Let me read your sources.
Exactly.
Amazing. Jenny, were you gonna say something?
No.
Oh, it sounded like you're about to.
Okay. I was gonna say something like about, I don't know. I like, so in that learning about those sources and then like having these new versions or these new fictions are like telling the perspective of that source that was uncovered. I don't know. I like that.
I like that stuff.
My brain went a little bit sidetracked because it started thinking about Six the Musical.
Oh, it's so good.
And like, like there's so many retellings of kind of Henry VIII and his wives out there, right? And like a lot of the purpose of them is all to kind of give women a voice, and like to not. And then I keep getting stuck on the lyric that's like, history is his story, and like they're stuck in his story. And so like this purpose of historical fiction is to unstick them.
Everyone go listen to Six the Musical. It is the best hour you'll spend.
It's amazing.
It's so good. Anyway.
Amazing.
But yeah, I love, like, one of the cool things about historical fiction that I love is when authors go back and they tell the untold story, and just getting that other perspective on an event or a person or a period of time that we're not given in like a history class or in like popular history or something like that, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. It sounds like a really good, like a really good reason to kind of seek these out, actually, is just to like get more context for some of these things outside of like the classroom setting.
I would 100% every time rather learn about history from the perspective of someone that was marginalized as opposed to kind of a white male historian.
Yeah.
Like,
seriously.
100% every time. Like, it doesn't make it any more or less factual in a lot of the cases.
Mm-hmm.
Just
amazing.
It's more interesting to be honest. I kind of hit a wall a few years ago where like I had read so many books by like white men that I was just like, I can't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and
I get it.
Even the ones that I were reading, like, was about looking at it from other perspectives or like researching
sure.
where those came from. So I was talking to Matt. I was like, I can't do it anymore. I don't have the patience.
That's valid.
Please make it stop. Does anyone else have any other like titles or particular things that they want to, you guys want to shout out before we?
I mean, I can shout out a couple of the other things I had on my list really quick. Yes. I think they're worth shouting out.
Please do.
Some good thrillers that I love that are historical fiction. I just read this one and I really enjoyed it. It's called American Spy by Lauren Wilkinson. And that takes place in like the 60s to the 90s. So end of Cold War. And about this young FBI agent who's kind of sent to basically be the honeypot kind of figure for to like bring down this communist leader in West Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But it just kind of like deals with like a theater of the Cold War that I wasn't familiar with, and I do love like Cold War stuff. I think it's fascinating. But that one was really fun. Really, really well written. The Doll Factory by Elizabeth McNeil is another thriller that takes place in Victorian England. Well, Victorian London, more specifically. And I love it because it deals with like art history and like the Pre-Raphaelite Brotherhood, which that's like one of my favorite like painting art, like art movements. So that one's really fun. 10,000 Doors of January by Alex E. Harrow is technically fantasy, but I would also classify it as historical fiction because it is very rooted in the early 20th century.
Okay.
Yeah, I like the main character, like it does bring in like alternate worlds and things like that, but the main character was raised in early 20th century New England, and that very much informs kind of the plot and how she grows up and develops as a character. And then also Circe and Song of Achilles by Madeline Miller.
I was going to ask about these actually, so that makes me happy that they're on your list.
Just the best books. I love Madeline Miller so much. But yeah, they're excellent. If you're into Greek myth, that is also kind of very, very well researched. Has that historical fiction element in that it feels very like grounded in reality while also being completely fantastical. But yeah, those are all the ones I had written down.
Yeah. Amazing. Any other choice shout out?
I mean, shout out, like if you want, so a lot of the historical fiction I read is actually not fantasy.
Sure.
Necessarily. So, I mean, romance-wise, I really love Tessa Dare.
Mm.
She is doing great things for historical romance.
That's awesome.
And then Alyssa Cole's series, which I haven't read yet. I've read her other series. She has one set in the Civil War that's supposed to be amazing.
Oh, okay.
And then the other, a couple that I would want to shout out are Marlon James, who he writes Black Leopard, Red Wolf, which is high fantasy, but he also writes historical fiction, or he did before his other kind of, his his two books before Black Leopard, Red Wolf were The Book of Night Women and The History of Seven Killings, which are both really, really, really good. Mm-hmm. The Book of Night Women is about a plantation in the Caribbean, I believe Jamaica, and it's kind of set, I want to say, in the 1800s or 1700s. Okay. And then A History of Seven Killings is about the murder of Bob Marley. Yeah, why can't I speak? And then the other book that's historical fiction, and again, by an author that also does fantasy and sci-fi, but The Remains of the Day by Kazuo Ishiguro is beautiful. And it is a quiet book.
Ooh.
But it will rip your heart out because Stevens is just... Kylie, you would call him a precious boy.
Oh, okay. Then I need to read it.
And so that is, so it was written in 89. So right when Margaret Thatcher was in kind of coming in, or she was, you know, in England.
Yeah.
And kind of a lot of the coal mining strikes were happening right when this was mm-hmm. published. And The Remains of the Day, though, is set during World War II. And it's the from the perspective of a butler who works in the house of a British lord or kind of upper class person, like Downton Abbey.
Okay. Yeah.
Duke kind of Downton Abbey. Duke.
but this Duke is like, he is sympathetic to the Nazis.
Oh.
And so Stevens' job is like to serve this guy. And it's really about Stevens and his relationship with the housekeeper. And it's just really, really beautiful and really quiet.
Amazing. Like
sometimes people call it boring and that makes me sad because it's so good.
No, I love boring books because they're never actually boring.
So good.
It's everyone else who's wrong.
And then you can watch The Remains of the Day, the movie with Anthony Hopkins and Emma Thompson. Okay. And I watched the movie version of it, like, right after Alan Rickman died, and I just started crying.
Oh, no.
Because I kept thinking about how sad Emma Thompson must be.
Oh, no.
But it's real good.
Okay, I'm going to order it, because that sounds like great. The perfect book.
It's so, so good. It's so sweet. We can talk about it after. But okay. I really like all of his writing, too. But that is the historical fiction.
Yeah. I know, that was the one you put in all caps. If you didn't mention it, I was going to ask.
I was like, guys, that's so good, but it is.
That sounds great.
If you like Downton Abbey, and if you like kind of learning about the perspective of the serving class, this is good.
I love Downton Abbey. I mean, it is like a trash show, but I also love it so much.
I love it so much.
Amazing.
It's basically like if Carson is Stevens.
Okay, excellent.
Like, or Stevens is a version of Carson,
excellent.
Who is very wrapped up in like the honor of serving in a lot of ways.
Okay, yeah, it sounds like the perfect book. I can't wait to read it.
Okay, so good. And The Hours by Michael Cunningham is another really good one.
Ooh.
Which that one takes place in that, so it is historical fiction actually. There's three timelines. One is Virginia Woolf writing Mrs. Dalloway. Then it's a housewife in the 50s reading Mrs. Dalloway. Oh. And then it's a couple in the 90s, which is like a modern adaptation of Mrs. Dalloway.
Interesting.
Essentially, like retelling it in kind of the context of the 90s.
Yeah. Fascinating. Yeah. I have not read anything on these lists, you guys. And it makes me feel like I'm not doing my job.
You should read the Temeraire books. I feel like you'd like those. They're fun.
Yeah, those sound great. The Devabot
books, like, sound, those sound like they would be good Gary books.
I think they would be good Gary books. It's like, it's just fun time and there's dragons.
That sounds rad. I'm gonna look into these. I'm just gonna have to place an order for a whole bunch of books this week. It'll be fine.
It's fine. Friday's payday, you know?
Yeah,
that's what Payday is for.
Exactly.
Order more books.
You buy books. That's the thing. That's the real reason we're all booksellers. It's because we want to buy more books.
Yeah.
I need to put together a list of books to order too, actually.
Yeah, I need to figure that out too. I have a few that I like want to read, but we'll see. All right. How are you guys feeling? This was fun.
Yeah, it was good talk.
Yeah. Thank you, of course, both of you guys for being here. I appreciate it. This is probably the quietest episode we've had of this show. But I think it's good.
I feel like I should have yelled more about genre.
It will happen sometimes, you know? We'll get there. It'll come up. I'm sure it'll come up at some point. But yeah, thank you for being here. Thank you, of course, everyone, for listening. You can find us online, mistgalaxybooks.com, to find any of the books that we... mistgalaxy.com. No books at the end. mistgalaxy.com. For any of the books we talked about today, you'd find us on social media at Mist Galaxy Books on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Of course, we want to say thank you to Austin Farmer, who provides us with our intro and outro music that's from Kill the Farm Boy, from his album Bookshelf Symphony Orchestra. And goodness, is that everything? Oh, and you can email us. If you want to email us, you can email us at podcast@mistgalaxy.com. Send us your emails if you have any questions, if you want recommendations, if you want, if you have any questions that we usually answer those on the Tuesday minisodes, but you can send those in anytime. Please do so. And we'll see you again soon in a galaxy not so far away.